kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. You can have the next verse up on the screen. Very, very simple, but the story they tell is incredibly powerful. And you can just imagine the scene, can't you? You've got two blokes. You've got one bloke who's just walking along, minding his own business. And as he's walking along and minding his own business, he sees something in the soil, something that's jutting out just a little bit. It catches his eye, doesn't know what it is. And so he walks over and he sort of looks at it and thinks, what is that? And you can see him, almost imagine him sort of clearing the earth with his feet and trying to find out what it is. And as he looks down and he thinks, that can't be what I think it is, can it? So you can imagine him going on his hands and his knees, can't you? Sort of scrabbling away at the soil, trying to see what's in there. And then finding something that was beyond his wildest dreams. Treasure. Who's ever dreamt of finding treasure? Anyone? Any of the kids? I bet some of the adults have. But imagine that, finding treasure in a field. And he sort of looks around thinking, has anyone seen me? Has anyone spotted that I found this treasure in a field? Because the treasure's not his. The field doesn't belong to him. So he thinks, I can't let this pass. I've got to do something, and I've got to do it now. So he covers it back up, flicks all the mud, so there's no tracks, so the soil looks undisturbed, and he rushes off, and he goes to his house, and he gets everything in his house, and he sells the lot. Everything. Do you get that? Absolutely everything that he has. His clothes, his stuff, his car, or cart. The house itself. And people would be saying to him, what on earth are you doing? Why are you getting rid of all your stuff? You're mad. You'll have nothing left. And you're not even selling it for the best price. And he says, I'm going to buy that field. What? You're selling everything you have to buy a field? And he just says, I've got a hunch. He knows the value of what he's found. And the second man, he's completely different. He's not wandering along, minding his own business. He's looking for something. He's a merchant. He's a businessman. He's been looking for years. He's seen lots of precious stones. He's seen other pearls. But something wasn't quite right. Something didn't meet what he wanted. Something was missing. But this pearl, it's so simple. It's so pure that when he sees it, he knows that that's what he's been looking for ages, possibly years and years and years. And so now that he's found what he wants, now he's found that pearl of greatest price, he does exactly the same as the other man and gets rid of everything. He says to the man who's selling the pearl, keep that pearl, put it behind the desk for me, I want it. I've been looking for it for years, and I am not going to let this pass me by. And he does exactly the same. Two men, completely different in their approach. One searching, one just happening to come across it. But both exactly the same in their reaction. They are absolutely persuaded, 100%, that what they have found eclipses everything. It's more important than whatever they've wanted, whatever they've got, whatever they hope to achieve. This is it. Let me just try and illustrate what it is that they saw. Now, I'm going to need some volunteers, and there's nothing horrible. So, right, Meg and anyone else? Yep, come on, at the back, come on. Yeah. Right. Now, I'd like you, please, Meg, to take that end of the rope and go as far as you can. And Leah, you take that end. And go as far as you can. Okay. Let's watch the scene. Okay. Get the end. Alright, now if I hold it, I hold it, you just wrap the tape around there until about there. Okay? Just keep going around.
sugar. That's it. Very tidy job. Okay. Nearly there. Brilliant. Right. Let me just cut that. Thank you very much. Right. Now, Meg, is that... Take that as far as you can. Just throw it towards Mark. And then you go and sit down. Thank you. Go and sit down there, Meg. Thank you. I want you to imagine that this rope, okay? This rope is endless. It doesn't stop by the drum kit. This is endless. And imagine that this rope is a timeline of your existence. That is the time we spend on earth, the red bit. This is eternity. But it goes on and on and on. When I was a kid, I remember somebody describing eternity to me like this. They said, you imagine you had a boulder of granite, one of the hardest substances known to man. So that boulder that we saw that was chasing Indiana Jones, imagine something that size. And every 1,000 years a sparrow flies past and it brushes, just brushes that boulder with the tip of its wing. Imagine how long it would take for that boulder to be worn down and to disappear. We can't even begin to imagine it. And that is just the first day of eternity. And so many people in this life focus on this bit. That's what consumes them. They say, you know what, I'm going to work really, really hard for this bit so I can rest there. It's mad. It's absolute madness. And that's the beauty of Jesus, and that's what the people in this story saw. The man with the treasure, the man with the pearl. Because Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is like that. And you can see focusing on that is not really going to help you, because when we meet Jesus, which everyone will, there is either going to be reward or there's going to be regret. It's reward or regret. And we should be living this life in anticipation of all of this. And that's the beauty of Jesus. So we're going to go and think more about what's he worth. But when you look and you think of it like that, it puts in perspective. Those men gladly gave up what they wouldn't be able to keep anyway because of what they gained. So let's sing two more songs that tell us about and remind us about the beauty of Jesus before we come on to the second part of the talk. So let's stand and sing as the music starts. I don't know what Jesus looked like. We have pictures, but no one really knows what Jesus looked like. But we do know what the Bible tells us. And the Bible tells us that Jesus wasn't anything special to look at. You wouldn't have given him a second glance if you walked past him in a street. The beauty of Jesus is not in his outward appearance. The beauty of Jesus is in what he's done. And for the next 5 minutes, we're just going to try and remind ourselves of what it is that makes Jesus that beautiful. And can I say, I am so conscious that my words are completely inadequate. To do it in 5 minutes, I can't do it. I couldn't do it if I had all day. I'm absolutely inadequate to declare the beauty of Jesus. But what we want is for Christians here today, people who have committed themselves to God, to just see that beauty and to be reminded of it. And for people who may not have taken that step yet, to think, I want the beauty that Jesus offers. And I'm just going to look at it under three headings. Pain, promise, and I've forgotten the third one, the plan. First of all, the pain. The verse is going to be coming up on the screen in a minute. But what we're told about Jesus is that Jesus came to earth with a mission. And that mission was to die. Jesus talked about his death
frequently. 3 days before he did die, he walked into Jerusalem knowing full well what was going to happen. It wasn't a surprise to him. That was why he came to earth. And yet the Bible tells us the night before he died, he went to the Mount of Olives with his disciples. And when he was there, he did this. And this is what we read. He fell to his knees and said, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly. And his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. Jesus wasn't an emotionally fragile person. Jesus was as fearless as he was compassionate. And yet here we have the strongest of all men falling to the floor in utter anguish. Why? We tend to focus on the physical side of the crucifixion, but if we do that, we miss the bigger point. Other people were crucified. Other people were crucified with Jesus that day. The key to why Jesus was in such anguish is found in that verse. "Take this cup from me." That cup was the cup of God's wrath. God's fury and anger at sin that needed to be dealt with. And when Jesus was saying, "Take this cup from me," he was anticipating that he, the only perfect person ever to have lived, was going to face the fury of God's wrath pouring over him like a dam that had been burst. And it was going to wash over him completely. And that's what prompted Jesus to say, "Take this cup from me." Because Jesus was beginning to feel what it was going to be like to be treated for the sins of the world. He was beginning to feel what it was going to be like to be separated from his Father, with whom he had perfect union. The bonds that we have with our children are nothing. They are a pale shadow of the union that God had with Christ. And yet Jesus was beginning to feel the abandonment that would take place on the cross as God turned his back on his darling Son because he was carrying the sins of the world. And when Jesus was saying, "Take this cup from me," he was starting to sip the cup that hours later he would drain to its dregs. And Jesus went through that pain, that spiritual pain, because his love for us was so passionate, absolutely passionate beyond our wildest imagination. And that passion is still there today. The beauty of Jesus is that he went through this. He said in his life, "No one takes my life. I lay it down of my own accord." He went to that cross willingly for you and for me because of his love for us. That is the beauty of Jesus. That leads on to the promise. Because Jesus was killed on that cross, but 3 days later God rose him from the dead. That was God saying to the world, "That sacrifice that my Son has made is not only sufficient, it is accepted." And by raising Jesus from the dead, God was showing that death was defeated. Jesus was later to say, "I hold the keys to death and Hades." Death was defeated that day. And because death was defeated, we have the benefit of one of the most amazing verses and promises in the whole Bible. It's found in the Psalms, and this is it. "The Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love. He will not always accuse, nor will he harbor his anger forever. He does not treat us as our sins deserve, or repay us according to our iniquities. For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his love for those who fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us. Now again, I need a few more volunteers. Let's just have one volunteer. Somebody who's not been up before. Okay? And it's not a horrible challenge. So somebody to come up and help me. There must be someone. I can't do it without you. That's not fair. Come. Come on. You'll help me. Come on. Come on. I'm going to get something here. I need somebody to come and help me. Good girl. Right. Okay. Okay. Do you know which way is north? Do you know that? Has anyone ever taught you how you can remember north, east, south and west? Right, how do you remember it? Never eat shredded wheat. What other ones do we have? Naughty elephant squirt water. Anymore? Anymore? I heard one the other day and I've forgotten what it is. And it was really good. Sorry? Shriveled worms? Never eat shriveled worms. Right, okay. Well, we've got a few of them. Right, now I want you to help me with your never eat shredded wheat. Okay? Or naughty elephant squirt water. Can you help us with this globe and show me which way is north? Where do you think north is? Okay, so that's the north. So if that's the north, okay, which way is south? Down to the bottom. And one way is east and one way is west. But I can't remember whether I need to face that way or face behind, so I'm not going to embarrass myself. I'm not going to ask you to do that. Right. If you went to the north with a flag, right, and I'm going to get your flag. Right. I thought this was appropriate, seeing as the Lions beat Australia yesterday and pretty much it was a Welsh team. So I thought I would have this today. Right. If you were an explorer and you went to the north, where would you plant that amazing flag? Where would you... Do you want to help her? Shout out. Well, a mountain. What's up the north? The North Pole. You'd plant it there, wouldn't you? Yeah? Right. If you went to the south, what's at the south? The South Poles. So you'd plant it there. Now tell me this. If you went to the east, where would you plant your flag? Where would you plant your flag? No, not eastern. All right, I'll give you an easier question. If you went to the west, where would you plant your flag? I really should have seen that coming, shouldn't I? Thank you. Go and sit down. You get the point. There's no end to east and west. And that's how far that God has removed our sins from us. And this again is where we see the beauty of Jesus. Because we tend to look at ourselves and go all inward and get all depressed and think, oh, I've messed up again. I shouldn't have done this. I should have done that. And we look inward and we think that God looks at us. And God doesn't look at Jason and see a ragamuffin with spiky hair, disheveled clothes, mud smeared all over my face and my arms and legs. When God looks at Jason, he sees me spick and span, my hair neatly gelled and combed, my clothes all tidy and nice, my face spotlessly clean, because God sees me as somebody cleaned and washed by Jesus. That's the beauty of Jesus. As far as the east is from the west, he has removed our transgressions from us. About 3 weeks ago, I was working down in Cornwall. And I got back, it had been a long day, I'd eaten too much the night before, that's not really a surprise, is it? So I decided to go for a jog. I went on the beach and there were lots of people at the entrance to the beach, but as you went further down, you know the way it is, it just became deserted. So I was jogging along the water, it was low tide or thereabouts. And I jogged one way, And obviously I turned around when I reached the end of the beach and I came back. And I could see my footprints that I'd made on the way. But as the sea was starting to come in, I could see those footprints were being washed away. And after the wave came in and went out, there was nothing. It was as if I'd never been there. This year, if any of you go to the beach, remember the beauty of Jesus. Your sin is washed away as if it had never been because of what Jesus did for us. That's his beauty. And thirdly, the plan. We have three things. More than that, but just three things. The first is going to come up on the screen here. We have never-ending life. What a wonderful thing to look forward to if you're a Christian. Jesus said that he went and he was going to prepare a mansion. There is a place, if you are a Christian, with your name inscribed above the door, set aside for you. And you will be there, imagine that rope again, forever in paradise. And when Jesus said on the cross to the thief, "Today you will be with me in paradise," we tend to focus on the in paradise. What we should focus on is the with me. Today you will be with me in paradise. That's the beauty of Jesus. And we tend often to think of heaven as a bit like your ticket for a holiday. So if you've booked your holiday and you're going in 2 or 3 weeks' time, you've got your ticket. It's nice to know that you've got your ticket. It's nice to know you're going away, but you don't need it until you actually go away. But it's more than that, because it should affect the way we live. And that leads to the second thing that we have, and that's we are free to live life. Jesus' beauty means that we are free to live life. Before we were Christians, our DNA, our default position was to sin. We are slaves to it. We can't get rid of it ourselves. We can do as much as we can. We can make all these resolutions, but ultimately we will keep coming back and failing. But when you become a Christian, your DNA is changed. You have a DNA transplant. You are no longer slave to sin. Yes, you will sin. Yes, you will mess up. But your direction, your genes are all pointing towards being more Christ-like. In the same way that Jacob can't help it, that when he grows up, he will have a family resemblance to me. Now, I feel sorry for him, but there's nothing he can do about it. And if you are a Christian, you will have a family resemblance to Christ, and nothing can stop it. A tweet came out the other day, I'm not even on Twitter, but Lorraine is, and it came to our joint email account. There's more mercy in God than sin in us. That is absolutely lovely. There is more mercy in God than sin in us. In other words, no matter how bad we feel, no matter how rubbish we think we are, God will change us. And thirdly, we also have Jesus with us through life. We have a friend, a perfect friend. Remember that old hymn? Whose love is higher than the heights above and deeper than the deepest sea. Before the earth's frame was formed, he loved me. Blessed be his name. We have the most, and I'd have sung it if I could. I could see Sarah mouthing the words. I could see Dave mouthing the words. I wanted to sing, but I wouldn't put you through that, okay? We have the most faithful friend. No matter what struggles we go through, no matter what weaknesses we have, no matter what temptations we face or the loneliness that we feel, we have a faithful friend who not only will hold our hand through the walk of life, but he will also step up in front of us and say to the Father, "Father, forgive." He intercedes on our behalf. The beauty of Jesus, we can only just glimpse it, but we see it in the pain that he went through for us. We see it in the promises that we have because of his death and resurrection. And we see it in the plan that he has for our lives. And as far as God is concerned, we cannot grasp the amazing grace that he has shown to people like us. And we're just going to watch a really short video before we sing to close. Amazing grace that saved a wretch like me. If you're a Christian here today,
Can I please encourage you, when you go away and spend time with your family this summer, don't just prioritise physical rest. Get close to Jesus. Rediscover his beauty. Share it with your children as you're on the beach, as you're in the restaurant, as you're walking along the road. And if you're not a Christian, then take that step. Run after Jesus. Be like those two men in the story. In that story, only one person got the treasure. Only one person got the pearl. But what it represents, everyone can have it. Jesus stands there, and he wants people to see his beauty and to come running to him. Because trying to cling on to what we have in our life is as stupid as somebody who has the winning Euro lottery's ticket for 81 million. That's the one that was about a month or so ago. 81 million. And it's like saying, look, I need to get that down to the office by 5 o'clock, because after 5 o'clock, that ticket's no longer valid. And saying, you know what, but I'm not going to pay a taxi to get there, because a taxi's 25 quid. What a rip-off. You'd never do that. And clinging on to what we have in that red bit of tape on the rope is equally as mad. We need to run after Jesus and gladly give up all that we have because of his amazing grace. Let's just watch this video, and then as that finishes, perhaps the music can start, and then we will sing our final song.